A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel sent us this one. He's been thinking about the weird psychological side of building with AI tools. You fire up Claude or Codex, you build a working app in a weekend. It actually solves a problem. People might even pay for it. And then this voice creeps in that says, "But you didn't really write the code. Who are you to charge money for this?" It's a specific flavor of imposter syndrome that AI-assisted building creates, and Daniel wants us to talk through both sides of it. The objective: how do I know this thing is actually production-ready? Question, and the psychological hurdle of feeling like a fraud when the heavy lifting was done by a language model.
This is such a timely thing to dig into because the speed gap has gotten ridiculous. A prototype that would have taken 6 weeks 3 years ago now takes 6 hours. But the psychological machinery for "do I deserve to be paid for this?" hasn't sped up at all. It's still running on the old clock. And that mismatch creates this almost vertigo-like sensation. You've built something real, but your internal sense of how long real things take to build is screaming that something must be wrong.
And the paradox is almost cruel. The tools collapse the technical barrier, which should be pure empowerment. But they introduce this new anxiety that's maybe worse than the old "I can't build this" anxiety. The old anxiety was, "I don't know how." The new anxiety is, "I didn't earn this." It's not just about capability. It's about worthiness. It's almost moral.
That's the core question, isn't it? If I didn't write this code myself, do I deserve to be paid for it? That's a genuinely new variant of imposter syndrome. It's not the classic, "I'm not as competent as people think." It's the competence came from somewhere else, so maybe I'm not competent at all. There's this sense that the AI is the real builder and you're just the unnecessary human in the loop.
Which is a fascinating thing to say out loud, because if you actually unpack it, the AI didn't decide what to build. It didn't identify the problem, talk to users, design the system architecture, iterate on the output, or validate that the thing actually works. The AI didn't wake up one morning and say, "You know what the world needs? A better subscription billing tool for freelance photographers." You did that. The AI executed, but you directed.
And that's the split we should trace through this. There's the objective track, the actual QA and validation signals that tell you your app is real and ready. And then there's the psychological track, the mental refrain that separates "I typed every semicolon" from "I delivered something valuable." They're both necessary, and they reinforce each other. Once you know the thing actually works under load, the doubt starts to crack. And once you reframe what building means, you stop needing to prove yourself with keystrokes.
Let's start with the thing you can actually measure, the objective readiness of your app. Because that's the part where you can run tests and get answers that don't care about your feelings. The test doesn't know whether you wrote the function or Claude did. It just passes or fails.
This is where I get excited, because pre-rollout QA is the antidote to subjective doubt. It's the thing that turns "I think this might work" into "I have evidence this works." And for a first-time founder who built something with AI assistance, running a real QA process is also a way of taking ownership. You're not just accepting what the model spat out. You're verifying it, hardening it, making it yours. Every test you write is you saying, "I am now responsible for this system."
Walk me through what that actually looks like. If I'm a founder who built a subscription billing tool with Claude, and it works beautifully when I click through it on my laptop, what am I not seeing? What's lurking beneath the surface that the Happy Path demo doesn't reveal?
The first thing you're not seeing is what happens when things go wrong. AI-generated code is fantastic at the Happy Path. It'll write you a clean Stripe integration that charges a card and provisions an account. What it often skips, unless you explicitly prompt for it, is error handling for the unhappy paths. What happens when Stripe's API returns a 429 rate limit error? What happens when the webhook arrives out of order? What happens when the user's bank declines the charge 3 days into a trial period? The AI isn't lazy. It just optimizes for the most likely scenario unless you tell it otherwise. and the most likely scenario is that everything works. But production isn't about the most likely scenario. It's about the worst case scenario that happens at 3A on a Saturday.
Those are the moments where a prototype becomes a liability instead of a product. The difference between a prototype and a product isn't the features, it's the resilience. A prototype works when conditions are perfect. A product works when conditions are messy.
And here's the thing. You can catch most of these before they ever touch a real customer. A concrete pre-rollout QA checklist for an AI-built app should cover at least four areas. First, load testing. Can your app handle 10 concurrent users? You don't need enterprise-grade infrastructure for an MVP, but you should know where the breaking point is, because knowing the breaking point means you can set expectations and plan accordingly. Second, error boundary coverage. For every external API call your app makes, you need to know what happens when that call fails, times out, or returns garbage. And I mean actually simulate those failures, don't just think about them. Use a tool that lets you inject faults into your API calls and watch how your app responds. Third, data validation. Is user input sanitized? If someone pastes a novel into your name field, does your database survive? AI models are notorious for generating code that assumes well-formed input, and users are notorious for providing the opposite. Do you have logs? Do you have alerts? When something breaks at 2A, will you know about it before your customers do?
That observability one feels especially important for AI-generated code, because you might not have a deep mental model of every code path. When you handwrite an application, you develop this intuition. Oh, that function is a little fragile. I should keep an eye on it. But with AI-generated code, you don't have that. The logs are your substitute for. I wrote this, and I know where the skeletons are buried.
And I'd add a fifth item that's less technical, but maybe more important. Have a friend or mentor try to break your app. Not use it, break it. Click things in the wrong order. Enter weird inputs. Disconnect their Wi-Fi mid-transaction. You'll learn more from 10 minutes of that than from hours of solo testing, because you're too close to it. You know the intended path, so you unconsciously follow it. A fresh set of hands doesn't know the intended path, so they'll find all the paths you didn't intend.
Because you're not testing what you built. You're testing what the AI built, and you don't have the same intuition about where the weak points are. When I write my own code, I know which functions I wrote at 11p after 3 cups of coffee. I know where the duct tape is. With AI-generated code, it all looks equally plausible on the surface.
And every failure mode you find and fix before launch is a confidence deposit. You're not just making the app more reliable. You're accumulating evidence that you understand this system and can be responsible for it. That matters psychologically. Each bug you fix is a little voice saying, "See? You do know what you're doing. You caught that."
There's also a validation layer beyond the code itself, and I think this is where a lot of AI-assisted founders get the order wrong. They obsess over code quality when the stronger signal is demand validation. Pre-sales, waitlist signups, actual user interviews. If someone is willing to pay before the product is polished, that's objective proof of value that no amount of code review can provide. A credit card charge settles the "is this real?" question faster than any test suite.
Y Combinator has been saying this for years with their "do things that don't scale" ethos. Manual onboarding for your first 10 users is often better than perfect automation. You learn more, you build relationships, and you validate that the problem is real before you invest in making the solution elegant. The AI lets you skip the building part, but it doesn't let you skip the understanding part. And if you skip the understanding part, you end up with a beautifully architected solution to a problem nobody actually has.
I've said before that pre-selling to 10 paying customers is the ultimate validation before building anything. With AI tools, the building is so fast that the temptation is to skip that step entirely. You can have a working app before you've even confirmed anyone wants it. And that's actually more dangerous than the old way, where the build was so slow you had time to do customer discovery in parallel. Now you can outrun your own validation.
Which is a trap. The app feels real because it exists, so you treat it as validated. But the validation isn't in the code, it's in the transaction. The code is just a hypothesis. The payment is the proof.
Let's talk about the good enough threshold. Not every MVP needs 5 nines of uptime. What's the minimum viable production standard for a first-time founder who built something with AI and wants to charge for it? Where's the line between responsible and over-engineered for someone who's shipping to their first 100 users?
I'd say there are four things you absolutely need before you take money. Basic authentication. You can't leak user data. This is non-negotiable. If someone trusts you with their email and password, you have to protect that. Payment integration that handles failures gracefully, not just the happy path. If you're charging money, the money part has to work, and it has to fail safely when it doesn't work. Error logging with some kind of alerting, even if it's just an email when something breaks. You need to know when your app is on fire. And a rollback plan. If you push a bad update, can you get back to a working state in under 10 minutes? Everything else is negotiable for your first 100 users.
The rollback plan is interesting because it's not a feature your users will ever see. It's purely a confidence mechanism for you. Knowing you can undo a mistake makes you more willing to ship. It's like having a safety net. You're more likely to attempt the trick if you know the fall won't kill you.
Shipping is the whole game. The founder who ships and iterates will beat the founder who polishes in private every single time. AI tools amplify that dynamic because they make iteration so cheap. You can ship, get feedback, and rebuild half the app in an afternoon. The cost of being wrong has never been lower, which means the cost of not shipping has never been higher.
Even with a bulletproof QA checklist and paying customers, that nagging voice might still whisper, "Yeah, but you didn't really write it." Let's talk about that voice. Where does it come from, and why is it so persistent?
This is where it gets psychologically interesting. Why does AI-assisted building trigger imposter syndrome more than traditional building? I think it's because of something called the effort heuristic, a cognitive bias where people equate effort with value. If something was hard to make, we assume it's valuable. If it was easy, we assume it's not. It's the same reason we're more impressed by a hand-carved chair than an identical one from IKEA, even if they look exactly the same and hold the same weight.
Which is completely irrational when you say it out loud, but it's deeply wired. A meal that took 4 hours to cook feels more valuable than the same meal made in 20 minutes, even if they taste identical. We're not just judging the output, we're judging the story behind the output. And AI tools rob us of a satisfying story.
And AI tools completely shatter the effort to output ratio that we're used to. You spend a weekend prompting and iterating, and suddenly you have a working SaaS product. Your brain looks at the output and then looks at the effort and says, "This doesn't compute. This can't be real. I must be cheating." The math doesn't add up according to the old formula, so the brain assumes fraud.
The brain is doing bad math. It's measuring input when it should be measuring output. It's like saying a photograph isn't real art because the camera did the work, while ignoring the fact that someone had to choose the subject, frame the shot, set the exposure, and decide when to press the shutter.
That's the reframe. The value you provide is not in the keystrokes. It's in the problem selection, the system design, the user empathy, and the ongoing maintenance. AI is a compiler for your intent. You are still the architect. The fact that you used a power tool instead of a handsaw doesn't make the house less real. Nobody walks into a house and says, "This is nice, but did you use a hammer or a nail gun?"
There's also a skill in the prompting and curation itself that people undervalue. The founder who writes the right prompts, evaluates the output critically, iterates toward a solution, and validates the result. That's real work. It's just a different kind of work. It's like being a director instead of a camera operator. You're not doing the manual labor, but you're making the creative decisions that determine whether the final product is any good.
The market is already validating this. Prompt engineering roles now command six-figure salaries. Companies are paying serious money for people who can effectively direct large language models. The skill is in the direction, not the execution. If a Fortune 500 company will pay $150,000 a year for someone who's good at prompting, then a founder who uses those same skills to build a product has created real value. The market has spoken. This is a skill, not a shortcut.
I think there's a useful historical parallel here. When Dreamweaver and WordPress first showed up, there was a whole generation of hand-coders who said, "That's not real development. You're just dragging and dropping." There were forum wars about this. People got angry. The market didn't care. The market cared about whether the website worked and solved a problem.
Now WordPress powers something like 40% of the web. Nobody asks whether a WordPress site was really built. They ask whether it loads fast and converts visitors. The gatekeeping didn't stop the tool from winning, it just made the gatekeepers look outdated.
The tools change. The gatekeeping changes. The market's question stays the same. Does this solve my problem? Everything else is just ego and aesthetics.
Let's make this actionable. If you're a founder sitting on an AI-built prototype and you're hesitating to charge for it, what's the mental model that gets you unstuck? How do you go from, I can't charge for this, to here's my pricing page?
I think it's this. Charge based on the value delivered to the customer, not the labor hours you invested. If your tool saves a user 10 hours a week, $50 a month is a bargain, regardless of how many lines of code you personally typed. The customer isn't paying for your suffering. They're paying for their own time back. They're not buying your effort. They're buying their own efficiency.
That's the thing. Customers don't know or care how the sausage is made. They care whether the sausage tastes good. If your AI-built app solves a real problem reliably, the price is justified by the outcome, not the origin story of the code. I've never once asked a SaaS company how they built their product before deciding whether to subscribe. I don't care. I care whether it does what I need.
There's another dimension here that I think gets overlooked. When you build with AI, you're not just shipping code. You're taking on the ongoing responsibility for that code. The maintenance, the updates, the security patches, the customer support. That's where the real work lives, and it doesn't matter how the first version was created. You're signing up to be the person who keeps this thing alive, and that commitment has value regardless of how the initial build happened.
That's arguably harder than writing the initial code. Anyone can prompt an AI to generate a CRUD app. Keeping that app running, secure, and useful for 2 years, that's a completely different challenge. That's the business. The initial build is the wedding. The maintenance is the marriage.
If the market doesn't care how you built it, and you've verified it works, what's the next step? Here are 3 things you can do this week.
First, before you launch, run a production readiness audit with a friend or mentor. Have them try to break your app. Fix the top 5 failure pattern they uncover. This gives you objective confidence that isn't just you convincing yourself. It's external validation that your thing holds up under stress.
Second, get your first paying customer before you feel ready. The transaction itself is the strongest signal. If someone pays, the product has value. Period. You can't argue with a credit card charge. Your brain can tell you all kinds of stories about why you don't deserve it, but a payment is a fact, not a story.
Third, separate your identity from your tools. You are not a Claude user or a Python developer. You are a problem solver who uses the best available tools. Charge for the solution, not the syntax. The customer isn't buying your tech stack, they're buying the outcome.
The market doesn't care how the sausage is made. It cares whether the sausage tastes good. Your job is to make good sausage. However you do it is your business.
I'd add one more thing. Compare 2 founders. One spends 3 months hand-coding a CRUD app from scratch, learning every framework, writing every line. The other spends 3 days with AI tools building the same thing, and then spends 87 days on customer discovery, user interviews, and iteration. Which one builds the more valuable product?
Almost always the second one. Because the hard part of building a business was never the CRUD app. It was understanding what people actually need. The CRUD app is the easy part. It's just the container. The hard part is knowing what to put in the container. And AI can help you with that.
That's the thing AI can't do for you. It can't talk to your customers. It can't feel the frustration in their voice when they describe their workflow. It can't notice the workaround they've built in Excel that they're embarrassed to show you. That's all you. The AI can build the solution, but it can't identify the problem. Problem identification is still deeply, irreducibly human.
The imposter syndrome has it exactly backwards. The part you're anxious about, the code generation, is the part that's increasingly commoditized. The part you're taking for granted. The problem understanding, the user empathy, the validation, is the part that actually creates value. You're anxious about the wrong thing. You're worried about the part that's becoming a commodity, while ignoring the part that's becoming more valuable than ever.
Which brings us to an interesting open question. As AI tools get even better, will this particular flavor of imposter syndrome fade, or will it just shift to new anxieties? Am I just a prompt writer? Is my entire business a thin wrapper around someone else's model? The anxiety seems to evolve to match whatever the current tooling makes possible.
I suspect the anxiety evolves, but never fully disappears. There will always be a new reason to feel like you didn't earn it. First it was, I didn't write the code. Then it'll be, I didn't design the architecture. Then, I didn't come up with the business model. The trick is, recognizing that earning it was never the point. Solving problems was the point. The anxiety is a moving target. You have to decide to stop chasing it.
Actually getting something into the world where people can use it and pay for it. That's the only validation that matters. Everything else is just internal noise. The market is the only critic whose opinion actually counts.
Here's what I'd say to Daniel and to anyone else wrestling with this. You build something that works. That's not cheating. That's shipping. The tools are new, the speed is unprecedented, and the psychological machinery hasn't caught up yet. But the old rules still apply. Harden the happy path. Charge for outcomes, not effort. And get your first paying customer before you feel ready.
The transaction will do more for your confidence than any pep talk ever could. Nothing silences imposter syndrome like a Stripe notification.
And now, Hilbert's daily fun fact.
In the 1840s, a shipment of nutmeg bound for Europe was mistakenly offloaded on the Cape Verde island of Santiago after the crew confused it with a cargo of peppercorns. The nutmeg sat in a warehouse for 3 years before anyone realized the error, by which point the local goat population had chewed to the burlap sacks and developed a lasting taste for the spice, briefly making Cape Verdean goat milk the most inadvertently fragrant in the Atlantic. The phenomenon was documented by a Portuguese naval surgeon who noted, with some bewilderment, that the island's cheese had begun to taste vaguely of Christmas.
Right. Of course there's a naval surgeon's diary entry about this. Something to sit with. This has been My Weird Prompts, thanks to our producer, Hilbert Flemingtop. If you built something with AI and you're sitting on it, run the production readiness audit this week. Grab a friend, have them break your app, fix the top 5 things that go wrong, then ship it. We'd love to hear how it went. Email the show at show@myweirdprompts.com.
You built something that works. That's not cheating, that's shipping. Now go find out if anyone wants it.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The hosts dig in, the hosts dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too, from half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time, stay curious, keep weird in mind.